Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cap Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm fine, considering the decline of Western civilization and all. As a matter of fact, I feel good about myself. It's just the rest of us that are going to heck in a handbasket.
Yeah. Back to the handbasket, are we?
Okay. Channeling the spirit of Uncrustables and Hot Pockets.
This came from a listener, by the way.
This came from Kelvin, a loyal listener
in Chicago,
whom I thank a great deal. And he writes, rather amusingly, channeling the spirit of Uncrustables and Hot Pockets, those two culinary triumphs, in April, Kraft will launch Bagelfuls. That's Bagel-Fuls. These are frozen bagels which come pre-stuffed with Philadelphia cream cheese. Bagelfuls are part of a segment called Handheld Breakfast Sandwiches.
Have we gotten that lazy? Okay.
Here's a quote from the director of marketing. Consumers are not spending a lot of time cooking these days, said Chitra Ebenezer. Ebenezer. The director of marketing for the new brand.
Slicing? How much time are we spending slicing? Is that a long time?
Are there no workhouses? Breakfast is one meal occasion they really struggle with. I know. Putting that cereal into that bowl, and then I got to get the milk.
It can take 8 or 10 seconds.
Sometimes the milk is sour.
Oh, golly. I got to buy milk once a week at least.
Sometimes I have to go and I want cream cheese and a bagel for breakfast, and I get up early because I have to put the cream cheese on the bagel.
Well, you got to slice it, too.
Well, you can't put it on
big.
Top.
Actually, no, you can buy Lender's bagels. They come pre-sliced.
Oh.
You can take that out of the freezer. Are you kidding me?
Oh, you know what?
I mean, the time to defrost is the time that it takes to slice and schmear a bagel.
Do you know what I do?
What do you do?
I actually have in Jersey City. I got to share this with you.
A bagel guy.
A bagel guy like you wouldn't believe. And I'm not kidding. And you know what?
All right, you know what? I'm a little ticked off this morning.
What?
I didn't get a bagel.
Oh. No, you know what? I should stop.
You knew we were talking about bagels.
You
didn't bring me a bagel smeared with cream cheese.
I have to fight the urge to have a bagel every morning, and I'd be fatter than I am. There's this guy who runs this little bagel place. It's open 7 days a week.
I love places like
from
that.
From well before when I get up, mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly what time it opens, to 2 o'clock. Closes at 2 every day. And he has good mild coffee. He has a bunch of juices and things. But he makes the bagels there fresh mm-hmm. every day. And you know what? That's a fresh bagel. And I go in and say, yeah, cinnamon raisin cream cheese. Wrap that up for me. Thanks a lot. But, I mean.
And that's got to be killing you to not have to stop in that bagel place there.
Oh, can in Jersey City, we can double park.
I got to share with you the opposite story.
Yeah.
Okay, I go into a bagel place in my hometown. It's a little place, and obviously they're not making the bagels there. But whatever, go buy a bagel. And there are muffins in the window. I'm like, you know what, I'll bring home a couple of muffins too. I'm having some people over. And so I order a couple of muffins. And I'm like, do you have any blueberry? Yeah, hold on a second. And I see the woman, swear to you, exactly true. She takes the Costco 12-pack of muffins, tears it open, puts Saran wrap around 2 of the blueberry muffins, and gives them to me and puts them in the bag and rings them up.
Are you kidding?
I swear to you, I can't believe we haven't talked about it till now. Exactly what she does. It's in Cranford. This is exactly what she does. She takes the package of Costco, slices it open, takes 2 out, wraps it up, puts it on the counter.
Okay, my guy had
I thought exact words that came to my head were, oh, shame on you. Shame on you. Because first of all, you're buying them from Costco. Okay, so that's like the, you know, you're buying muffins from Costco, please. Okay,
secondly,
number one. Secondly.
You're doing it in front of me.
You gotta hide that better. You just bought 12 muffins for $1.40 and you're charging me, you know, $1.50 a muffin. You know, you gotta cover that up somehow.
Plus the quality of the...
Oh, they're terrible. Come on. It just, you know, I look at stuff like that and I understand small business. Believe me, I understand small business. You have to stay open. You have to operate and you know, people do things that maybe they wouldn't otherwise do if they were looking from across the other side of the
but
counter.
But I don't stop into your bakery to give, if you're going to give me Chips Ahoy when I order the chocolate
exactly.
Chips, hide the bag. You know? Hide the bag. That's all I'm asking. All right, we only got a minute left, but I want to share with you one other thing to watch out for in our crazy society. It seems as though soda companies have a pilot program where they're introducing small amounts of vitamins into the soda.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Why not? What a great idea.
Well, all that is the way, and they're not even like a lot of, it's not even like 100% of your daily dose. You know what I mean? So it's a way to convince your kid yet again that it's not bad for you.
What a great idea.
Guess
what? Put some vitamins in.
I have soda a couple times a week. It's bad for me. I enjoy it a great deal.
I'll tell you, I have soda now probably
twice a week.
It's probably once a month now. I've just reduced that part
Whatever.
Of my life
it,
to oblivion.
But what I'm saying is when you're making a choice, they should not. Okay, we're passing laws that say that you can't say that milk doesn't have recombinant bovine growth hormone. That's not allowed on the label. You can't say that.
But you can put vitamins into soda and tell people it's good for them.
But you can put vitamins, that there are vitamins in your Coke, or your, I don't want to name Coke because they'll sue me, in your sugary soda. It's we've lost our minds. You have to keep listening to the
Again,
show.
If it were sugary soda, I would have less of a problem with it. It's corn syrupy soda.
Yeah.
Well, high fructose corn syrupy soda.
We're losing our minds. You have to listen to the show. You have to pay attention to what you eat, and you have to eat good food. Back in just a moment, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:13. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey, and our guest today is Margaret Wittenberg. She's an authority on natural and organic foods and environmental sustainability. She's Vice President of Communications and Quality Standards for Whole Foods Markets, the nation's largest chain of natural food supermarkets, where she's worked since 1981. She's a former member of the USDA National Organic Standards Board and currently serves on the Marine Stewardship Council's Board of Trustees. She's been called the conscience of Whole Foods, and she joins us today.
Margaret Wittenberg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's been great. It's great to be here. Thank you.
You're actually, I'm talking to a conscience. It's amazing.
And I am conscious today, too.
Conscious.
That's even better.
I talk to mine all the time, but nobody listens.
So let's talk about Whole Foods. We say good things about Whole Foods all the time in our many discussions of how to source food responsibly. Why don't you talk to us about Whole Foods and about sort of the conscience of Whole Food, whether that's embodied in you or not. What's the mission there?
Well, you know, it's been interesting. We've been in, as a company, we've been around since September 1980, and I joined in January 1981. I was at the 24th employee of the company, and now we have well over 40,000. But the interesting thing is that the values have always been the same about food. You know, in the early days, it was very, even more simple than it is now. No artificial flavors, colors, and preservatives. I mean, that was always the mantra that we had. And in the 1980, in the early 80s, especially was an interesting concept because it was a whole grocery store that really showcased those kind of foods. And you could, you know, shop as normal shopping would be, but you knew that those foods would have it that way. Well, over the years, food science has gotten pretty interesting, you know, making things a lot more complex, you know, genetic engineering, I mean, and all these kind of things have come up. So along the way, we've really had to step up and evaluate things, whether it's looking at food or body care products or seafood, meat, I mean, all of that kind of thing, and just decide, okay, where is the line for us? What are we going to do? So it's been interesting. It's really fascinating work.
You know, Margaret, it's not just the science, though, that's become more complex. The lexicon's become more complex. The words that we use to name things has become more complex. Can you just talk a little bit about how those the different words mean so many different things and how I think that so many people just don't understand what word means what?
Well, in fact, that is so true. And local is probably the one that came to my mind right when you're saying that, because local really kind of means whatever it means right there where you're buying your product from. You know, local could be, for example, I'm in Texas, and local for Texas would probably be the whole state of Texas, mm-hmm. because they've always been very pro-Texas as a state with foods, even though this is a very, very big state. And in other areas, it may be that it's just within, like, eight hours of a driving time to get there, or it can include, like, a whole region. So, you know, the whole thing on local, when people say that, you got to ask them what the definition is.
Well, you know, it's funny as we talk about words and definitions and as you brought up earlier, how things have changed since, you know, in 1980 or 1981, you said, okay, no artificial stuff in here. Well, you know, it's gotten really complicated for people who listen to our show. I think a lot of folks who listen to our show and who include both restaurateurs and people who buy for food service operations and people who buy for their home.
Okay, let's be honest. It's been really complicated for me.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You know, and I do it every day.
But if it's not your job, it's complicated to try and eat ethically to navigate all the different issues that are out there. And I mean, my view, and I have a biased view, is that, you know, food science and agribusiness keep throwing different machinations of Frankenfood at us, and they try more and more to make it harder for us to distinguish what's Frankenfood and what's normal food as we think of food on a farm. I think one of the things that on the one side, what you do at Whole Foods is you can help to educate customers, but on the other side, You give people the option to say, you know what, if Whole Foods says it's okay, it's okay. I don't have the time to navigate all of this, so I'll just go to Whole Foods and I'll trust that they're drawing a line that I would be comfortable with. Do you think that that Whole Foods occupies both of those roles?
Well, yeah, you know, we know that we do that. We know that the complexity out there is so great, and that people have their everyday lives of just maintaining a household. Whether it's just yourself or you have a family, going to work, just doing all those things. And in order to really understand the issues, it takes somebody that's really focusing on it. And, I mean, that's what we do at Whole Foods Marketing. I mean, it's important for us to know that the food that we sell really is what we feel proud of having in the store. And our customers, over the years, we have gotten their trust that we really have really tried to look and see what that is. I mean, including having a staff that actually doesn't look at it, you know, and that kind of a thing. So,
you know, I want to pick up this point. We have to take a quick break, Margaret, but I want to take this up on the other side with Margaret Wittenberg of Whole Foods to talk about what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable and the things that are hard to navigate for consumers trying to eat responsibly. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagut and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guide. Today we're talking with Margaret Wittenberg of Whole Foods. She's been called the conscience of Whole Foods. She's one of the first employees of that august company and is responsible for helping draw the line as to what's carried there and what's not. You know, Margaret, we were talking before the break about the line that's drawn as to what's wholesome and what is considered, you know, I guess, whole food. One of the things that's very difficult, I carry around in my wallet a little card that I got from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. They did a show with us about what's a sustainable fish and what's not, and whether certain fish you should look for farm-raised and not. And the issues that arise around, I mean, fish is for me, the most complex example of what's good and responsible to eat. Are really complex indeed. How do you at Whole Foods go about drawing the line? Is it that you guys come up with what you think is right and then present that to your customers and hope that your customers find an audience? Or is it that you have a customer base now that you sort of consult and try to see what it is that they want?
Well, first of all, seafood is extremely complex. You have the whole environmental issue, health issues, everything kind of combined in that. And unlike livestock, when you have it in a defined area and you know where they've been and all that kind of thing, seafood is, if it's wild, it's certainly out in a great expanse. And then, or if it's farmed, you know, there are a lot of other very unique issues related to aquaculture that you wouldn't find in land-based farming.
Well, especially when you consider that fish may travel thousands of miles in their lifetime, where, you know, a deer generally lives in one specific area, or even wild game that we might go after in here, it doesn't cover the same amount of ground.
Adding in complexity. And so what we've done is, you know, again, that trust that people have within our company that we have really done our homework. What we've done is really evaluate both in wild and in aquaculture, and including, but we're very big in multi-stakeholder groups. We have included input from the producers, input from environmental scientists, input from environmental groups, input from customers, input from people who are considered the tops in procuring seafood. I mean, we've done all that so we can understand the issues and figure out, so what do we do? And for when it comes to wild, one of the things that we decided back in 1999 was to really support the Marine Stewardship Council. And that's an international group based in London. And what they have is the best environmental choice type of label.
Margaret, we're going to leave it right there. We're going to go listen to the news, but we're going to come back right on the other side of the news, and I hope you'll stick with us and we can talk more about this very issue. In your new book, New Good Food, which we'll talk about after the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with The Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Margaret Wittenberg. She's an authority on natural and organic foods. She's Vice President of Communication and Quality Standards for Whole Foods. She's been called the conscience of Whole Food, and she has a new book out called New Good Food, Essential Ingredients for Cooking and Eating Well. You can find out about this book and Whole Foods on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We were talking about responsibly putting together what is a responsible selection of food and eating responsibly. And I know that, you know, I talk with my sister, and she goes to Whole Foods because she's not as much of a foodie as we and not in the business. But she wants to eat responsibly, and she goes to Whole Foods because she says, you know, I don't need to think about it, but I trust that they've thought about it for us. Now, you talk about having stakeholders from the community come in to try and figure out what is a responsible way of sourcing food. But how in the company do you make that decision? Is it voted on by all the employees? Are there a few people that make those decisions? How does that happen?
Well, we have quite a series of meetings when we're dealing whatever area that we're looking into with the quality standards. First, getting the input from all the experts that we've, you know, literally found around the world in whatever the specific topic that we're looking at. And then we talk about it within the buyers of that group and what do they know is from their buying experience to add into that. And then we come up with a draft on the standards and then put that through our executive council in the company so that we have several layers of people looking at it just to make sure that everything has been considered and evaluated, because it's a multi-stakeholder from outside and also within the company.
You know, I want to talk about an issue that Mark and I say all the time, and it seems to hold sway with Whole Foods, but I wonder if there's a dissonance there inside the company. We always say that if I sent you out in the height of August in New Jersey, and I sent two people out on two different missions, and I sent one guy to find the most flavorful wonderful, complex, juicy tomato that he could possibly find to bring back to the restaurant. And I sent another guy out to find the most responsibly grown, local, nearby, you know, traditionally grown tomato. Those guys are going to find themselves staring at the same tomato somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, the quality and all these other issues. You know, the good thing about it is we say we're not asking people to sacrifice to do good. You know, we say this is one area where you can do good by doing well. You know, you can eat better. But is there ever a dichotomy where you say, you know, that's the most delicious thing, but it's not really responsibly grown?
Well, you know, I think years ago that is how that was even more of a dilemma for us. But I think over the years we've had a lot of producers looking at this in two ways. One, many of them are saying, great, now there's a market for what I've been really wanting to do. And then, two, you know, consumers are actually tasting the product and seeing how much better it does taste. How an animal is raised is very aligned with this. How fruit and vegetable, I mean, everything, the way that you either produce a food can really make a difference in how it tastes. And I think that's what really hooks everybody on eating well. I mean, certainly there's information all over the place on what it means to eat well and what to do. But, you know, when push comes to shove, if it doesn't taste good, it isn't going to be something that people are going to glom onto. And eating well is something that people can really resonate with. So the two go hand in hand. It is really a virtuous circle on how that is. But I think having the producers know that there are people who want it and there also are markets that they can sell it through really bodes well for all of us, whether you're a producer or a consumer.
I want to go beyond even how an animal is raised, because while both Francis and I believe that's very, very important, but how it's bred, and this conversation is become a bigger conversation with the whole FDA ruling on cloning and things like that, but how an animal is bred is also very, very important. What mainstream animal husbandry does is they want to breed everything so it tastes exactly the same, and it's, you can count on it being exactly the same and mediocre. Okay,
right.
That's basically what the goal is.
Because you can always achieve mediocre.
Because mediocre is easy to achieve all the time. And frankly, I think that's what the whole cloning thing is going to end up doing as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, where that's going, what trajectory we're on with kind of the mainstream animal husbandry?
Yeah, you know, I think that's it. You know, I think the quest for the cheapest product around has really got us in this mess where you have mediocre food. The animal isn't being treated well. Nobody's winning on this. And I think the good news is where you have new opportunities on the market like grass-fed, heritage breed, you know, focusing on unique kind of breeds that you can really tell a difference in the flavor. I mean, how many times have you heard when somebody's had an egg or some chicken that was raised from chickens able to roam around, just be out there in the environment
Peck, yeah.
and all that. This tastes like how I remember my great-grandma or grandma used to have it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the eggs are a different color, and people say, my goodness, you know, look at that. All right, but this brings up some larger issues. I mean, one of the things that we talk about very often in the show is now that there is a market, and Whole Foods is proof that there is a strong market for a desire for these things in consumers. One of the things we battle very often, and we've had government officials on, and we've had people involved in the various certifying boards on to talk about this, is big corporate agribusiness trying to weaken the organic standards or all of these standards by trying to sort of change what the definition of organic is, or, you know, produce things that, you know, we wouldn't consider to be wholesome, but be able to put that on the label so they can get a premium for it and sort of glom onto this market. What's the standard, what's going on with Whole Foods in that? Because that's got to really concern you guys, the weakening of those standards.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, we're very much involved. I mean, as you had mentioned, I had been on the National Organic Standards Board for 5 years, from 1995 to 2000, right when the standards are actually being developed. And those certainly were spirited meetings. And, you know, I think we got a lot accomplished. But, you know, when you have a standard, that's when it really all starts. You have to continue to monitor it. You have to know that there's going to be other interests, you know, trying to have so that they can have an inexpensive product available. And an example of that is not too long after the standards were actually implemented, there was a particular House representative from a state where they produce a lot of chickens. And in order to reduce the amount for feed costs, he tried to slip in, and actually did, a clause in there that organic feed was essentially desirable, but not, you know, depending on if it was available or not.
Not necessary.
So you could produce an organic chicken in that state without feeding it organic feed, which is not an organic chicken.
Right. And so that actually was like within a huge, huge bill. They call it an omnibus bill. I mean, you actually think of it. Everything on the bus is in there. And some of us found out about it after it had been dealt with, had been passed, and then a lot of representatives didn't even know it was in. And so what we did is we, you know, contacted all the representatives, we got our customers involved, and eventually that law was, you know, they went back in there and made the changes and took that out.
Wow.
I mean, that's the kind of vigilance you need to do, and we're doing that all the time, every day, to make sure. And there's also that concept of continuous improvement that is actually embedded in the whole spirit of organic, that, you know, we are always trying to encourage the producers and manufacturers to keep that consideration. You know, standards are not just that you should or should not kind of thing. You also need, what can you do to actually make, to really enhance the environment? That's what organic's all about.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
and there's always somebody that's going to be looking for a loophole to make a few extra bucks. So you got to maintain those standards to stop those people from
doing
it.
And it's funny, you have on the one side, you have, you know, the organic producers who really, you know, brought this about because of the spirit of the organic movement, who are looking to make standards better, whereas at the same time, you have some corporations who see that by making them weaker, they stand to make a lot of money. So
right.
So you have these two forces that are pulling, and that means you, our listeners, have to pay attention. And, you know, when we talk about these things on the air, we have engendered phone calls to legislators' offices, and believe it or not, you know, 5, 10, 15 phone calls often makes a difference, because these are decisions that are made in a dispersed way. The corporate strategy is decided in a central location, but, you know, they can chip away, you know, in states, in counties, everywhere. So we have to be careful.
And I can't emphasize that more than as much as I really would like to, is how important those calls are. In fact, even in that one incident that I was just telling you about, and I think we were quite influential of just at least getting that out in the public mind and, you know, trying to get this change. It was interesting in the congressional newspaper and they had even mentioned how influential our calls were, you know, that the consumers did, because it does make an impact for them. It's almost like there's not an exact little mark on how they figure it out, but somebody actually calling is equal several kind of letters, because a lot of times they just get form letters,
yep.
You know, you need to have more than that. You know, that's nice just seeing 600 letters come in, but the actual information on it, if it's unique, they really pay attention to
absolutely
it.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back more and talk more with Margaret Wittenberg, and we're going to talk about her new book, New Good Food, which is a valuable resource for you to use. 1450 WCTC, the time is 11:46.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work. Until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Margaret Wittenberg of Whole Foods. She is an authority on natural and organic foods generally, as well as having been called the conscience of Whole Foods. She also has a new book out, which we're going to talk about right now, called New Good Food, Essential Ingredients for Cooking and Eating Well. Margaret, we've talked earlier in the show about how it's getting sort of more complicated to try and eat responsibly and well and healthfully. Is that why this book is, to help people figure out how to buy stuff?
Yes, because it's interesting. I think people can get so mired into what to do, I don't know what to do, and the worry, what I wrote this book so people could know what good food is and really enjoy it. You know, I think if you understand all the wonderful foods that are around and, you know, explore the possibilities, you can just really get right in there and eat well, and the rest just comes with it.
Margaret, one of the Francis and I spend a constant amount of time railing on high fructose corn syrup and the damage it does to our bodies and the bodies of our children. And you spend a lot of time talking about sweeteners, a whole chapter just on sweeteners.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the alternatives that we have?
Oh, yes. You know, there's a myriad of alternatives. You know, I think people are certainly aware, well, sugar is actually a natural product because it's from sugar cane, but there's also a lot of other natural sweeteners that people are somewhat aware of, but they haven't been using them as on a regular basis, as I think it, once they try them, it's just a lot of fun to play with. You know, certainly no honey and maple syrup. Mm-hmm. But there's also things like agave nectar. That's a new one that's out there, and it's from the same plant that tequila comes from, so that can't be bad.
Yeah, we're even using that one in cocktails now.
Oh, great, great. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's one that people are really enjoying. It's similar in its effect, you know, like honey. It's a high in fructose, so when you bake with it, you know, you're going to have, you know, moist rather than crispy as you would get with maple syrup and that kind of thing. But, you know, there's a lot of that date sugar. I mean, there's a lot of different sweeteners to play with, and they all have their different flavors, their different properties. And
well, I think one of the things that's interesting is your book is written in a very simple and accessible way. I mean, right from the table of contents, which lets you zero in on something you might be interested in. But one of the things I think that's frustrating for people who, say, want to substitute something in place of sugar, initially they'll go to non-nutritive artificial sweeteners, which always have an aftertaste, which a lot of studies show you don't lose any weight by using those. But there are different things that you can substitute, like maple syrup, but it works in some applications and it doesn't work in other applications. So knowing the difference between agave nectar and what maple syrup, white murk might work in and what honey might work in, I mean, that's really helpful if you're cooking at home or baking at home, and that really works in your book here. I think that works for a lot of things, whether it's flowers or nuts and seeds. Do you find that people have lost the information because you think maybe it in prior generational shifts it would have been handed down from your grandmother, but it just skipped a generation somehow?
Yeah, I do believe that. In fact, I remember the day that one of my aunts introduced my mother to instant mashed potatoes. And, you know, that was one of the things. And I'm a child of the 50s and 60s. To me, that was where I had the start of where convenience kind of took over some of the skills that, you know, that people have used and passed on for time and time along. And I think people have the misinformation that cooking from scratch, if you want to call it that way, is really a long process. I mean, within the book, I try to emphasize, if you want to spend a lot of time in cooking, you can, and that's what I do on weekends and that kind of thing. But during the week, I know that I can eat really well and cook very quickly by focusing on what foods are really quick to cook and really delicious and what to do.
Or eat a bag of nuts.
And nuts are very good. I think that was one of the things in my book, too, that I really emphasize, is that nuts are not just for snacks. I mean, they're a great snack, but the value, the nutrients that it's the good fats are what are now being touted as really important in our lives, and nuts certainly provide that.
You know, it's funny. This is a very dumbed-down, simplified example, but I've always wondered at Country Time Lemonade, and I'm probably going to get sued for saying this, but I've always wondered at Country Time Lemonade, they have the commercials with the grandfather sitting on the porch in the prairie talking about, when I was younger, we'd make lemonade, and you made lemonade with high fructose corn syrup when you were younger, Grandpa? I don't get that. And then I think to myself, okay, you're home. If you've got lemons and sugar and water, or you've got the Country Time lemonade can and water, is it really that much more difficult to squeeze lemons into water and put sugar in there than it is to... It would strike me it's harder to scoop the sugar stuff in there because you've got something to throw out. I mean,
you know, that's all good. That's just all marketing. I mean, for a food manufacturer, it's in their best interest to have people feel like cooking is really a tough and arduous thing and takes just forever, and we're just so busy that we don't have time to do that, and here they are to save us. I mean, that's the whole mantra.
Hey,
and
we don't mind that so much, Margaret. We think you should go out to dinner.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, but in your restaurants and really good restaurants, you're actually dealing with food, you know, rather than some chemicals thrown together that kind of look like it.
I always hate to end a conversation, especially when someone's complimenting me, but Margaret, we have to leave it there, and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it's been fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks
super.
So much.
Keep up the great work at Whole Foods. You'll be back with the Restaurant Guys in just a moment. 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:56. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. You know us. You know what I was thinking about the whole time at the last part of the segment?
Where we're going for lunch?
No, you said a bag of nuts. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing to do in Whole Foods, and I don't know that it's that healthy, but in Whole Foods they have the peanut butter thing.
Oh, yeah. The grinding machine.
Like
I know the one
you're talking
about.
They're the peanuts, and you grind them into peanut, and it comes out as hot peanut butter.
And it smells great.
And they have the regular, the honey roasted peanuts, and the salted. And the honey roasted also has some salt on them. I take the honey roasted, and whenever I'm there, I go and I buy, like, the smallest container of it. And Jennifer laughs at me because, I buy all this wholesome, healthy stuff, and then I buy a really dark chocolate bar on the way out. Talk about two great tastes that taste great together. The honey salted one.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups has a great idea.
They're good.
Okay? Because peanut butter and chocolate are magical together, especially when you get a really great chocolate.
I wonder if Margaret Wittenberg would be mad at me if she knew that that's what I did with the whole food. I didn't just go have a healthy meal. Hey, listen, everybody. I hope that you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys talking about one of our favorite stores. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.